Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's time for the highly sought after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And welcome back for the highly sought after, fabulous final hour of the Tom Abraham Show. Phone lines are open right now. If you want to get in, you can get in at 866-485-9867. We want you to show off your big brain and go ahead and pick the Friday Future Fecta. We've got two left now. We've done 16 college football teams. You can find them posted at the Facebook fan page. You could go back there and see them and get caught up. But we've got four AFC teams for you today. We've got the New England Patriots over or under 12.5 wins. What do you think, T-Mac? The Patriots at 12.5.
Big Dog, give me the under on the defending champs.
I'm with you. 12-4 is where I'm at, is with you as well. I mean, that's just, how do you predict 13 wins?
That's tough.
I mean, that's just
like,
yeah, I mean, things happen. It's, you know,
right.
13 wins. Plus, they may have the division locked up, you know, with four or five games to go or something. You know what I mean? And they may, they may mail in a couple of games near the end. Who knows?
You mean late in the year, Smoke and Jay Cutler's not going to give them a run? Is that what you're trying
Smoke
to tell
and Jay
me?
Didn't, you know, Smoke and Jay didn't look bad. No, but I mean, look, here's the thing. If they go 8-8 in Miami, everybody's going to be like, oh, they went 8-8. They were 10-6 last year. I feel like they were an 8-8 team last year that went 10-6. I just think they kind of pulled a couple of games out of their rectum. And the next thing in order, we're 10-6.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anybody predicting them as a playoff team this year before, you know, for the most part, even before the injury.
I think 8-8 are over. I mean, Miami fans need to buy Jay Cutler a pack of cigarettes apiece. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, that's not bad. Not for Miami.
I wonder if he really smokes.
I don't know. I hope he does.
I'm thinking he doesn't, but just wondering. All right, the Steelers are at 10.5. I got them under two. I think the Steelers are 10-6.
I actually had the Steelers over. I picked them to go to the Super Bowl last year, and they were one game short. I don't know. I like the Steelers. If Big Ben can give it one good last go, I like their offense. And if Le'Veon Bell can ever be there for an entire season, I think they do really well. I like the Steelers at over.
The Colts are 8.5. I got them under. I think the wheels come off this year, and I think that Chuck Pagano is going to be one of the first guys to get fired. How about that?
Well, the division's gotten a lot tougher. Andrew Luck is we're really not sure. You know, he might be there game one, he might not, but he could get hurt again. I like the Colts at under two because I think Houston's just getting better and better, and I think the Titans are already really good. So give me the under.
Jimmy Irsay say? Jimmy Irsay said that he will be there. Andrew Luck, he's certain, will be there for the start of the season. Maybe not game one, but he'll be there for the start of the season. I don't even know what that means.
Does he know what that means?
I don't know if anybody knows what that means. I'm not sure. I mean, he said a bunch of things like that.
That's what, I mean, start of the season means game one. I mean, game two and three might be early in the season, but it's not the start.
Maybe that's what he meant. Like, if you're there in the first quarter, maybe that's what I mean. And then there's the Titans, who are also at 8.5. I'm saying over because I like them, but I'm saying over. But I'm telling you, this team, the Tennessee Titans, I think have one of the biggest floor to ceilings, so to speak, in the NFL. I can easily see the Titans at 11-5. I can easily see the Titans at 5-11. I think they have the potential. They have one of the biggest floor to ceilings in the league.
I definitely agree with you. The Titans have Dick LeBeau, which is very, very nice. I mean, even at, 90 years old, walking around there, he's still a presence. But there's still something concerning about the defense. But I think the offense is really deep and it looks really, really good. I got the Titans at over, and I'm with you. I can see them going either way. Last year, they did horribly in their division. They didn't perform very well in their division at all, but they also beat 5 playoff teams. You know, so you can say, well, they beat 5 playoff teams. What if they don't do that this year? Well, what if they turn around and do better in their division that they didn't do well in last year? So I at least...
Well, it's a zero-sum world. I mean, you know, they'll right. do better in the division and they'll get beat by the Raiders week one, you know? So you just don't know. Look, they're going to be... My concerns are with the schedule to a certain extent. When I look at this schedule right now, I know that this isn't the way to determine how it's going to go, but I think that they will be an underdog against the Raiders. I think the Raiders are going to come in as a 1 or a 2-point favorite. Maybe it's a pick 'em, but what do you think? You think they might be a dog to the Raiders, a slight dog to the Raiders that everybody thinks is a Super Bowl team or potential Super Bowl team? I think they're a slight dog to the Raiders. I think they're a slight dog to the Seahawks. Both of those games are at home, by the way. So they open up Raiders at home, slight dog. At the Jags, they'll be the favorite. Back home against the Seahawks, dog. At the Texans, dog. They're going to be underdogs in 3 of their first 4 games. The Titans, if they get through the start of the season at 2-2, the first quarter of the season at 2-2, you got to be pretty happy. I think 2-2, you're happy. 3-1, you're ecstatic. Could be 1-3. And the chatter ramps up big time. So then you go to the next quarter of the season. At the Dolphins. Probably a pick'em game, depending on how the Dolphins start. They might be a slight favorite, depending on how the Titans start. At home against the Colts on Monday Night Football, I think they'll be a slight favorite. At the Browns, I think they'll be a slight favorite. Then they get the Ravens at home. I think it'll be a pick'em or a slight favorite. But these aren't games that they're going to be a 6-point favorite. These are all toss-up games. Bengals at home. They'll be a slight favorite. I mean, they're playing more games that they're 2-2.5-point favorite or underdog than anybody in the league. I mean, are you feeling me here, T-Mac? You see what I'm saying? They've got more what I would call toss-up games. I mean, the ones that, the Jags, they should sweep the Jags series. You put those in the W column. They should beat the Browns at the Browns. They should beat the Colts at home, I believe, but they haven't beaten the Colts in, you know, a long time. But these are, you know, Ravens at home, Bengals at home. Those are still toss-up games. They're a dog at the Steelers. They're a dog at the Colts. It's going to be maybe a pick-em-ish at home against the Texans, depending on how the season's going. Now it's December 3rd. They're a dog at the Cardinals. They may be a point or two favorite at the 49ers. They'll be favored at home against the Rams and the Jags. I think that they're a dog in 6 games. At least 6 games.
Big Dog got connected. We'll get right back to the Big Dog. He was discussing the Titans being underdogs in possibly 6 games. Tom, you back now? I think he connected. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm back.
What happened?
I don't know. It's just I yelled and something happened. My mic died or something. I don't know what happened there. But did you hear what I said, though? Dog in 6 games.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean,
I got to upset somebody.
For the Titans? That's not bad. Dog in 6 of 16. That's not bad.
Well, it might be more. I'm just saying. But the thing is the games they're favored in, You know, at the and I'm saying at the Dolphins, it'd probably be like a pick 'em.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a 1-point favorite or 1.5. Colts at home, they might be a 2.5, 3-point favorite. You know, and they always lose to the Colts. Hopefully they don't. Ravens at home and Bengals at home. I mean, both the Ravens and the Bengals coming in, I bet they're no more than a couple of point favorite. That's going to be one of them 2.5-point favorite type things. So they're real. They got a lot of real close. They're going to be a dog at the Steelers, a dog at the Colts probably. It's tight, man. It's my boy Drew Hall. I haven't heard from him in a while, but it's football season. Drew, welcome back, man. How are you?
Big dog. What's going on, brother?
I'll tell you what's going on. I'm tapping my toe over here. It's an hour and 50 minutes to kickoff for the high school football season, my son's senior year, and I'm just trying not to think about it because I'm very, very excited to be going to see high school football tonight.
You know, Tom, it's in the air, man, but I think I know what happened when you got disconnected. I haven't called in a while, and the show just felt the electricity. It just felt the energy coming.
That's what happened.
Things up, and that's my bad, Tom.
Yeah, that's what happened. You called in, and it was it was like a power surge. And when the power surge happened, it knocked me off the air. Your phone call knocked me right off the air. That's pretty powerful.
Listen, man, when you got it, you got it.
Yeah. And where are you doing it these days? Did you get a job downstate or something like that, or where are you at nowadays?
Back in Gadsden, you know, just teaching and coaching. And I actually got a chance this fall, going to get to do a local scoreboard show.
Really?
So call in on Friday nights, you know, give you the scores. We'll run down games for Northeast Alabama. It's going to be fun, man.
Well, that's good stuff, man. Where did you say you're at? You're working in Gadsden, did you say?
Yeah, well, actually Cherokee County, if you know where Cherokee County is. So.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Well, that's good
and
stuff,
they got
man.
Good fishing lake up there, so I figured you probably knew where Cherokee County was.
Oh, I know where Cherokee County is. Yeah, man, that's good stuff. So you want to get
we
in?
We got big things going on. You know, I mean, yeah. Auburn's got a new starting quarterback.
Yeah,
Bama's kicking off with FSU. I mean, can you picture another like a bigger opening weekend than we've got this year? Like in the last 20 years, because I can't remember one.
Well, every year lately, we've been saying that. I mean, there's been some big games every year, but I'm looking forward to Florida, Michigan. I think that's a very intriguing game. And then, you know, of course, the Alabama FSU, I'll be there, you know, at that game. So there's some great, great stuff opening. I'm intrigued by Georgia Tech and Tennessee to see what, you know, what Tennessee has got and if they can handle that freaky offense of Georgia Tech. So there's a lot of very interesting football in week one.
Tom, who's the bigger week one for? Is it a bigger game for Florida or a bigger game for Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines?
I think it's bigger for Jim Harbaugh because, A, he's the favorite. Two, that they got to start thinking about winning a Big Ten championship at some particular point in time. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, it's only his third year. Well, you know what? That James Franklin, who just got a raise, he won the Big Ten in his third year. Urban Meyer was winning national championships by then. Nick Saban was winning national championships. So come on, Jim Harbaugh, let's see what you got. If Florida, as a 3.5, 4-point underdog, goes into that game without their best receiver in Antonio Callaway and beats Michigan, that's a step back to me for the Michigan program. For Jim McElwain, he's not even picked to win his division. You know, he's been to the SEC championship the first 2 years. Nobody's predicting him to win the SEC championship, even if they get back to a rematch, you know, with Alabama or something. So I think that all of those things are in play. I think the pressure 100% is on Michigan.
You know, I would agree with you. You know, as bad as everybody said, the SEC's been or it's been down the last few years. I'm not going to say bad, but been down. You know, these Big Ten schools and everybody else have really got to start jumping and pouring it on them if you really want that to stick.
Yeah.
Because you know as well as Alabama's the class of the league, but everybody else is kind of got to compete too. To show that the SEC is still dominant.
Well, what you've got is a Big Ten that's got four teams in the top 10 in the coaches poll this year, and then everybody else is in a witness protection program. So they're very, very good to have, you know, four teams out of their 14 teams, four of them are in the top 10. That's wonderful. But where's the depth of the league? Now, with the SEC, they got six teams in the top 25, but only one in the top 10. So, and then you've got teams at like 12, 13, you know, and then you get with LSU and Auburn, and then you got teams in the bottom, you know, more in the bottom part of it, 16, 17, 18, you know, down in that range. So the SEC with that depth, but if one of the SEC teams that's ranked 16, 17 in the country is knocking off one of the top 10 Big Ten teams, you know, that's problems for that conference if they really want to be, you know, considered on this equal footing.
You know, that's what I would agree to. And you know as well as I do those, you know, the mid, you know, mid-teens to 20 teams, you know, to top 20 in the SEC, when they get three or four wins and they're sitting there at the end of September at 4-0, they're going to be a top 10 team. So
yeah.
We know they're going to creep back up there just because the SEC has that favor with the media and the voters. But, I mean, it's really big for these other leagues. You know, I would say especially the Pac-12. The Pac-12's got to get some big relevant teams in there.
Yeah.
Because it's been the Big Ten and the SEC, and that's it.
Yeah. And Auburn jumps into the Big Ten week two if they just knock off Clemson. I say just knock off. They're going to be a touchdown underdog in that game. But if Auburn walks into Clemson and wins that football game, they're you know, they're going to be eight in the country the next week, you know, if not higher.
But listen, how hot is that seat going to be on Gus if he struggles with Georgia Southern? And when I say struggle, just not a clean game. I expect Auburn to walk through that game and win by plus 17 easy. But if he struggles with that triple option, and you know that gives people problems, and then he goes and gets beat by Clemson at Clemson and it's not a close game, the seat's got to be getting warmer.
You know, that Georgia Southern, you say you expect them to win by 17. You know they're 38-point favorite in that game? I think that's highly, highly dangerous. That's that Georgia Southern runs one of the best-looking triple options ever. We know what they did with Alabama when they went for over 300 and some odd yards against Alabama with that running attack. And that's a dangerous spot. I mean, I think they win the game. I think you're right. I think it has to be a clean game. But if they win that game by three touchdowns, nobody should be grousing, and they won't cover the spread by 17 points if they win by three touchdowns. But if they beat Clemson, they're 6-0 by the time they go to LSU. Because if they beat Clemson, they won't have any problem with Missouri at Missouri or beating the two Mississippi teams at home. They're going to be 6-0. And if they're 6-0, they're going to be in the top five. You watch.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. And they need to be 6-0. Gus needs to be 6-0 because I don't think 8-4 is going to save him again.
Yeah,
because, Jared Stidham's the man. He's the man, Tom. I mean, he is the man. And if he can't win with Stidham, he couldn't win with, you know, all the other quarterbacks he's had down there. What's going to be the next excuse for another 8-4 season?
Well, you know, you hope he's the man. He certainly looked like the man for three games at Baylor where they play arena football in that Big 12. So, you know, it would seem to be he's the man. There's no question about it. I thought Jeremy Johnson was the man. I never thought it was going to be like this. I never believed in James Franklin III. I mean, he couldn't stay on the field at Last Chance U. He only had 700 yards passing or something like that there. So I never bought into that guy. But I bought into Jeremy Johnson, that's for sure. And, you know, so who knows? I mean, you would think that this kid's got all the tools, but it's still a little bit of a different animal, especially in the second half. Well, that Clemson defense will be stout. But, you know, that Mississippi State defense won't suck. But when he goes to LSU, Arkansas, you know, they've got that stretch when they're at LSU, at Arkansas, at Texas A&M, come home against Georgia. That's going to be a grind. That four games in 5 weeks with a bye in the middle, that's when you're going to learn about Auburn.
Well, you know, I agree with you 100%, Tom. And no disrespect to anybody in the Big 12, but you can plug Tony Mack into Baylor's offense or anybody's offense in the Big 12. And I think during a three-game stretch, he throws for 706 touchdowns.
Yeah. All right, brother. Good to hear from you, man.
Hey, good. Yes, sir, Tom. I'll make sure I call and check in with you every now and then, buddy.
All right, thank you. Yeah, definitely. Definitely call us. Let us know what's going on. Good job right there, Drew Hall. He won that I Want to Be a Broadcaster contest that we did. Remember that? Weiss Lake, by the way. He's talking about Weiss Lake over there in Cherokee County, down there by Gadsden. There's Gunnersville. You go up over the mountain. On the other side of the mountain is Weiss Lake. All right, let's grab a break. Oh, let me get Buggy in here first. All right, let me get Buggy in here first. Buggy! What's going on, man?
Hey, what do you say there, big dog?
I say it's. I'm ready. I'm ready, man. I'm ready for the action to start.
Brother, I am too. That's the whole nature of my call. I'm in and out of the truck all day, so I don't know if you announced where it was going to be at. I know it's at 6:30 on Thursday, but not sure where it's at.
Well, what I announced was, because we haven't announced where it's at, we're very, very close on that, but we may be backing it up a week to the 31st. Now, I'm hopefully going to know everything on Monday, but we may have to go back a week to accommodate the sponsor, which everybody's going to love. But if they need it to be on the 31st instead of the 24th, I'm going to make that happen that way. So just stay loose for an announcement, either over the weekend or very, very early in the week.
Yeah, 31st actually works better for me. So,
yeah.
You hear from Dirty Dave on this yet?
You know what? I don't know, because I've got 40 guys in the text windows, and I don't know if Dirty Dave was one of them or not. Guys send me their text to say they want in, and I just I send it to a file, and I haven't actually looked at the names. But if he's not, I'm going to smack him upside the head. He'll be there.
All right, boss. Well, you have a good weekend, and look forward for a little revenge this year.
You'll know where to find me. I mean, you can go 14-2. And lose those two games to me. You'd be like the Titans, like the Jacksonville Jaguars in 1999. You'd be 14-2 with two losses to the Titans.
Yeah, I got you, man. They pay you to talk, so you just keep talking. I'm coming for you.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. Thank you.
See ya.
They lost three times. Remember that? Not T-Mac. I say remember that. That was a year. It was a year you first remembered anything.
What a memory it was.
That we're 14-2. Was it that year? Was that 99 or 2000? They were 14-2, the Jags, and they lost two regular season games to the Titans, and then the Titans knocked them out of the playoffs. That's pretty funny. All right, now we can get a break. When we come back, we'll rewind it next, right here, 730-1039, The Ump. Well, I guess on the Tom Abraham Show, here on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline, where right now you can get a great deal on a 2017 F-150 because, the 2018s are coming in. They got to make room for those. Also, when you go down there, you're going to see them putting the finishing touches now on the brand new showroom. It is spectacular with a big capital S. Of course, the service lanes have been open, and new service lanes have been open all summer long, and that's fantastic as well. And always leave yourself some time when you go down there to check out Henry's Mustang Cafe, breakfast and lunch, full-service restaurant at Henry's Mustang Cafe. We had Chris Cotillo in the leadoff role today. Then Josh Ward was an SEC insider. Mario Puig joined us from rotowire.com. Brent Sobolewski joined us from the Bleacher Report talking NFL, and then former Titans and Panthers safety Michael Griffin was in. This is your Woody Anderson Ford Rapid Rewind. Your guys and my guys again this weekend. Pretty good series last weekend between the Yankees and the Red Sox. They both went off and pretty much had a good week of winning, and now to get together in Boston. And, we said it before, we'll say it again. This looks like something that's being set up for the long run. The haters are not going to like this, but this is something that seems to be set up for the next several years because both these teams are loaded with 20-somethings, and I think it's good for baseball.
I do too, and it's about time. I mean, we talked about this in the past, but these teams were always 1-2 back, when I think, baseball peaked back in 03 and 04 in those series. They played in the ALCS back-to-back years and were 1-2. And over the last few years, we've seen, a lot of different teams be in the mix. The Rays made it to a World Series, the eight, and then the ALCS had the Orioles and Blue Jays. So those teams have really gotten better and even things out in that division. But, with all the young stars they do have, and there's a lot of star power that's going to be injected into it over the next few years. Obviously, if the Yankees sign Harper, the Red Sox make a big move like that. There's a lot of potential for all these prospects, all these young guys, and even more big-time stars to come. And I think, the best rivalry in baseball looks like it's back.
And what I like, too, is that they're not doing it on the weekend when they're wearing the, the crayon uniforms or whatever they are, those player unis or whatever, because it'll look like it's supposed to look. Because to me, I call it eye candy, like Cubs, Cardinals, Dodgers, Giants, Yankees, Red Sox. It's sports eye candy, and you want it to look like that. You don't want it to look all hokey.
Yeah, it's when the Red Sox wear the blue or red uniforms on Friday nights. I don't like that, especially against the Yankees. But I think, the player Bears weekend next weekend is actually going to be really cool. I think it's really these events that we're seeing over these two weekends between Little League Classic and the Players Weekend with all the nicknames and the different jerseys and all that stuff. It's making baseball really fun again. And we saw the All-Star game this year was a little bit more fun, a little bit more gimmicky. And I think, you know, there's a lot of old school people that aren't going to love it, but there's a lot of, you know, young kids and younger generations that we want to get involved.
Yeah, and that's you and I. See, you and I are at opposite ends of that deal because you're the generation, you're already into it. You're going to watch baseball no matter what. But your generation, they're trying to grasp, so they do this, and you think, hey, you're looking forward to it. It's going to be cool. Me, I don't even want to watch baseball that weekend. I think it's stupid. I'm like Joe Girardi. He wouldn't even put a nickname on the back of his jersey. Probably wear like a Yankee jacket over it so it doesn't look, you know, too crazy. But for me, I don't need that. What I need is for them to stop the 15 trips to the mound from the catcher, all the kicking the dirt around, guys getting in and out of the box. I just need pace of play. That's all I need is pace of play. And I also got to do something about this umpiring, these balls and strikes. It has gotten so bad. And just to show you that I'm not a pure traditionalist, since they got Quez-Tec, why do we even need an umpire calling balls a strike? When are we just going to go ahead and go with the Quez-Tec, or whatever they call it? Let that thing give a beep, a green light or a red light or whatever. If it's a ball or a strike, you can put an umpire back there to call, safe and you know, call the bases and whatnot. But we don't need umpires calling balls and strikes with this technology. And I'm getting sick and tired of watching balls right down the middle being called balls because the umpire is lined up behind the batter and then having balls that are 6 inches off the plate being called strikes. It's never been this bad.
No, and I think, you know, they're going to see that technology as it advances over the next few years. I think that they're probably going to start testing it out, whether in the minor leagues or in independent baseball, something like that, is kind of the test kitchen for getting into the majors. There's a lot of people on, you know, on both sides of that battle of automated strike zone, but it seems like every day there's a new controversy, whether it's Ian Kinsler this week or whoever else, with controversies about balls and strikes. And I think automated is probably where we're heading.
Yeah, and, it's interesting. One of the headlines that's been floating around the last day or two is Gary Danielson's comments about the SEC being quote-unquote down. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have a contender to win a national championship in Alabama, but he's citing the fact that Auburn is right now considered the next best team in the league. And Auburn has this weird thing that they do, you know what I mean? A lot of times when there's big expectations around Auburn, you know, they'll struggle. And then other times when there's not as much, you know, they can have – Auburn can pop a 12-0, 11-1 on you at any time, it seems like. And there are some parts in place there for them, certainly, this year. But I don't think it should be something that – a lot of gnashing of teeth to say necessarily that the depth of the SEC is not necessarily where it has been in recent years. But I'm not sure the ACC or Big Ten is there either.
Yeah, I think last year would be a year to make that case. This year, let's see, because it's been an off season where we've talked so much about the quarterbacks, and if quarterback play in the SEC is better, then that might cause people to think that the entire league is just better as a whole. I mean, you look in the East, that's a division that has been largely unimpressive the last few years, but and it could kind of cannibalize itself. There's a lot of talk about that, and I see that point, but it could also be a division where everybody's a little bit better. Missouri could be better than it was a year ago. Kentucky, it could at least hold steady from where it was a year ago and be a 7-5 level team, potentially 8-win team. Same with South Carolina if he can beat NC State. And that's not an easy game at all at the start of the season. But if that could happen, then they could be a bowl team again. And then Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee are all in the top 25 preseason. And we haven't seen much of that in a long time with those three teams all at the same time because of the change those programs have experienced. So if that happens, and then Auburn is a good football team, LSU's pretty good, Alabama's a potentially great team like it always is, then I'd say at the end of the season we'll talk about SEC football being better, and then let's see what the other conferences. The Big Ten's supposed to be really good at the top. Can it be that in the middle part and the bottom? That's the question. They have four preseason top 10 teams, but that's also it for the top 25.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, there's a few things at work here. The SEC can be down, quote-unquote down, and still be the best conference in the land if it works out that way, because the confluence that they had of coaches and talent is just something that you don't normally see. And if you look at the coaching talent seems to be more distributed evenly across the whole of college football. So I think it's more about that than about one conference or the SEC, in this case, being down a little bit. You've got, you know, two or three or four great coaches now in every conference. We just saw James Franklin, who was in the SEC back when Mark Richt was in the SEC, back when Steve Spurrier was coaching it. We just seen, you know, him get a contract that makes him the fourth highest paid coach in the nation, and three of the four that aren't Nick Saban are all in the Big Ten. So I think that's part of it. And look, there's been a distribution of guys that have ties to Nick Saban that know that system, that are coaching at other places, that know how he recruits. And at some point in time, you know, you're going to have that seeding going on all around the country, I think. I think it's just spread out all around the country now. It's just not all in the SEC.
Sure, yeah. And those coaches you mentioned leaving the SEC and going elsewhere, that does, I mean, when you have coaches that were really well thought of in the SEC 5 years ago, in the last 3 to 7 years, that are now in other conferences, obviously that helps those other conferences. But the SEC, I think it's a league with a bunch of good coaches. Does anyone emerge as an elite coach? You know, Dan Mullen's kind of talked about that way, but he's at a program where the potential is just more limited than other schools, Mississippi State compared to Auburn, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Texas A&M probably. So that's something to keep in mind. But you know, Gus Malzahn's a good coach. I think Jim McElwain's a good coach. Butch Jones is a good coach. These are guys that have won football games. But if we're talking about 8 or 9 wins in a season, well, to those fan bases, that's not nearly enough. And for critics around the country looking at the SEC and what the big picture expectations are for those programs, well, you're going to be knocked down a peg. And Nick Saban may be part of the reason for that. But until a coach goes out and wins, you know, one of the big bowl games or New Year's Six game, or obviously a, you know, plays in the playoff or national championship, then they're going to be below coaches that have gotten to that level, like Meyer and Dabo Sweeney. I mean, you know who the coaches are. David Shaw, yeah. Stanford. These are guys that have won at a higher level, and they're given more credit, and I think they deserve it. If Gus Malzahn's able to break through and win the SEC title again this year and get through Alabama, then Malzahn will jump up when we look at next year's coaches ranking. Same goes for, you know, if Ed Orgeron has a 10-win season, he'll go way up in a lot of rankings, I would say. So there's still a chance for these guys to show it, but that's what they still have to do. They have to show it.
Mario Puig with us, football editor for RotoWire. All right, thoughts on college. I mean, I've dabbled with this. Of course, in our neck of the woods, college is obviously it's king, really. And yet everybody plays fantasy in the NFL. There's more and more traction, it seems like, for college fantasy. And on the one hand, you know, you got 100 teams. On the other hand, we'd like to do it just in the SEC, you know, just do an SEC fantasy type thing. Do you see it ever within conferences? And how do you deal with these games that blow the numbers apart because they're playing an FCS school or they're playing a group of five conference team, and it kind of changes that? It's almost like a preseason game dropped in the middle of a season.
Right, so there is a way to do on Fantrax.com is one site. That's Fantrax. That's one site, at least, that lets you set up the conference eligibility however you'd like. You can make it all 128 teams. You can make it just SEC. You can make it SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, the Power Five, in other words. So it's the strategy changes a lot depending on the player eligibility. Like, sometimes we have users emailing us, like, asking for overall rankings for college football, and it's just not possible to do it because in an SEC league, you know, there might be a lot of running backs that produce, but not as many receivers. And then the Big 12 is going to be, you know, like 8 to 12, 1,000-yard receivers. So the player scarcity can invert just by adding or taking out one or conference. So it's an interesting game. I play it myself. RotoWire, we have rankings and projections and updates on college fantasy football. But yeah, it'd be nice to see it catch on a little more, because if you do follow college football, it's pretty fun. It's not the same as NFL exactly. There's a lot more points scored because you don't have like 250 yard rushing games in the NFL as often as you do in the college game.
That's for sure. Mario Puig with us from RotoWire. All right, every year we have guys that are highly ranked guys that turns out that's the year they fall off the table. I remember that happening with Larry Johnson and, you know, some guys like that where they're going to be all of that. I think it happened with Sean Alexander 1 year. He was the number one guy, and it turned out, you know, he fell off the fell off the map. And then you get these sleepers when Priest Holmes and other guys like that came out of nowhere. So give us about two or three names, regardless of position, that are guys that you got to be careful with, that this could be the year that it falls apart for them, and then two or three guys that are sleepers that could come out of nowhere.
So at the running back position, you find the classic fall-off candidates like Sean Alexander, like you mentioned, Larry Johnson. Yeah. Basically, when they're getting older, when they've taken a lot of hits in their career, I'm still a little bit concerned about LeSean McCoy, and especially after the Watkins trade. With Watkins not there, that's going to let the safeties creep up even closer to the line of scrimmage. And he's had hamstring and knee troubles at each of the last 2 years, if I remember correctly. So worry about a guy like that. He got the ball a lot at Pittsburgh in college, too, and of course with the Eagles before he got to Buffalo. Similarly, DeMarco Murray in Tennessee. Great year last year, but there's only so many of those hits you can take, and he's a bruiser. He doesn't shy away from the contact. That's kind of what undid Larry Johnson. Like, he'd bowl into the tacklers instead of trying to run away from him, and it adds up. So I guess Marshawn Lynch is another worry, even though he had a year off. You only can take so many of those hits. The receiver is a little harder because I feel like the top talents there are still in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. When I worry about the fall off, it's more about like the surrounding contact. Like, we saw two great receivers last year, DeAndre Hopkins and Allen Robinson. They were huge disappointments just because their quarterbacks were so bad. And both of them are at risk of the same thing again this year. But it's mostly at the running back position where I would worry about guys just completely falling off a cliff.
Who knows? I don't know. This Kaiser kid, he obviously looked pretty good in that first preseason game. We'll see what happens on Monday night. They moved him up the list a little bit, right? He's going to go with the twos, I think. They're going to start with McCown, who looked like Josh McCown of last year, and then Kaiser will come in after that on Monday night against the Giants.
Correct, and then it's the opening with Osweiler as their starter, and then Kaiser coming in with the second team to see not only how he can continue to improve, but how he fares against similar level players. They're not trying to throw him to the wolves, because as we know, the New York Giants, even though they may not have all their starters out there, was still number two in scoring defense last year. And you don't want to overwhelm these young rookies. And that's applicable to not just to Kaiser, but Patrick Mahomes and Mitchell Trubisky and Deshaun Watson, who all played quite well in their premieres. Right. And it gives each of those teams hope, maybe more than fans should be letting on at the moment, but it comes down to putting them in a position to succeed. And I think all their teams had did so to varying degrees in the first week of the preseason.
A lot of jokes about smoking Jay Cutler coming out of retirement to play for the Dolphins. And I'll be honest with you, they were one of the teams that I thought were vulnerable for a fall, you know, from that 10-6 of last year. I thought that was a little bit spongy if you're looking at teams that could go in an opposite direction. And that was before Ryan Tannehill got hurt. But what are the chances, the way Cut looked last night? You know, he didn't look like a Fox broadcaster that was playing quarterback. He looked like a quarterback. And he's with Adam Gase, the guy that led him to his, you know, best success. What are the chances that they are at least as good or maybe even a little bit better with Jay Cutler at the end of the year than they would have been with Ryan Tannehill?
Well, first of all, I agree that they're one of those teams that are susceptible. You know, each year on average, you have six new playoff teams, and that's just the way the NFL is each year in their postseason, how cyclical it can be. Granted, you have your teams at the top that you expect to be there, but the rest is wide open for the second-tier teams to really compete for the playoffs. With the Dolphins, I tend to agree when it comes to Jay Cutler. I'm not necessarily sure you're not in a better position overall at quarterback than with Ryan Tannehill. I've never been a Ryan Tannehill believer. He did show progress last year, but he still had areas which needed improvement. Now, Cutler, obviously, he's going to take a little time to immerse himself into the culture with the Dolphins. He'll know the scheme, but it takes time to build a rapport and get the reps necessary to be a starting quarterback. But when you look at his surrounding cast, whether it's Jay Ajayi as your running back, the Jay Train can absolutely carry that offense at times. You have one of the best wide receiver cores in the NFL when you have Jarvis Landry, Kenny Stills, and emerging Devontae Parker, who's people just raved about all offseason. Mm-hmm. So those three, combined with improvement at tight end as well, Anthony Fasano, who is one of the best blocking tight ends in football. Then you have Julius Thomas addition, who was great with Gase in Denver. As long as that offensive line holds up, and that's not guaranteed either, at least the Dolphins could put points on the board and be good enough to be in the conversation to make the postseason two straight years.
How important is it going to be for the Ravens to really get, you know, make sure that Joe Flacco is ready to go right off of the jump with Ryan Mallett, who, all right, you know, for the Ravens, in a running game that is featuring Terrence West, but, you know, I think he had 8 carries for minus 2 yards in that game last night. And, you know, it's starting to look like the Ravens may have a lot of question marks going in.
Absolutely, and I think you're being kind when it comes to Ryan Mallett, man. All right.
Yeah.
And it's a team that, again, when I start up front with all the problems they had there. First of all, they were trying to replace 2 starters going into the preseason, not then Urshel unexpectedly retires, and Alex Lewis gets injured, he's out for the year. Now you're re-signing Jeremy Zutaw off the street to be your starting center. That's an issue up front. If they can't hold together, whether Joe Flacco is ready to come back or not, he can't actually complete a pass when he's on his back. And you don't want him to hurt that back because you don't have a viable backup quarterback, in my opinion. And that's a team that already had issues with the running game. One of the most amazing statistics for me when it comes to the NFL over the last 2 seasons, no team has thrown more passes than the Baltimore Ravens over the last 2 years. Not the Patriots, not the Saints, not any of the teams you would expect. The Baltimore Ravens have thrown more passes in the last 2 years than any other team in the NFL. So when you consider you have a quarterback with back issues, very poor depth behind him, and offensive line problems, that spells disaster.
All right. Speaking of Texas, Tom Herman, tell me your impressions, what you think about the program. And you know, you got a situation, of course, over at A&M where Kevin Sumlin is under some heat there. He's got to probably win 9 games. And now all of a sudden, you know, the attention shifts back to the Longhorns and what Tom Herman might do. Do you think they got it right there, or what are your impressions been so far?
You know what? Believe it or not, Tom Herman, he was around when I was a freshman at Texas. He was a graduate assistant. Went on, you know, got a coaching gig and became a head coach at Houston, and now he's back. I know him in his early years, but he's a great coach, great guy. Nothing to take away from Charlie Strong. He was a great guy. Also, you know, unfortunately, you know, things just didn't work out in his favor. But, you know, now he's down back in Florida coaching down there where, you know, he recruited a lot of guys where he's well known. And I'm pretty sure he'll get that program back on a good course. But Tom Herman, I mean, everybody has his approval. Everybody's behind him 100%. Yesterday he had Peyton Manning at practice yesterday. So, Bill Belichick was here during one of the summer camps. So, I mean, he's getting guys coming in, getting everything excited. New weight room, new locker room. The lockers, if I'm not mistaken, are $10,000 a piece. They have their own monitor above with each player's picture and their highlights. He's just doing a lot of different things around this, you know, just getting everybody excited. The way he practices, I mean, he's building men out of these guys. He's building character. And, I mean, they're up every morning. They got practice at 8 o'clock, and they're done around 10, and then they got meetings and they got curfews. They got all the stuff that we didn't have. I think maybe we was just accustomed to knowing how to win, but he's building a winning tradition around this program. And I'm excited to see how they do this year.
Well, they sure got the lockers that you didn't have. I mean, you didn't have that in the NFL. I don't know. Have you ever seen a locker room anywhere like that before?
I've never seen a locker like that ever. I didn't know that even existed. So, the new – just the whole facility. I mean, they're changing a lot of things around, and it's a state of the art. But he said that was one of the things that, you know, to get the best players to come in, you know, these recruiting classes, you got to be up to date. Everything was outdated. So, I mean, he's doing it, and he's using the money.
Now, you know what I'd do is I'd be like, if they laid an egg, they go out there and they get whacked by Oklahoma or something like that and lay an egg, you lock the locker room. You tell them, you know what, you can't even go in this, you don't deserve this locker room. And you, like, make them change in, like, the girls' soccer locker room or something like that and tell them you got to earn your way back into that locker room. How about that? You got to earn your horns.
You ought to see this. I mean, we had a state-of-the-art weight room before, but what they're doing now is unbelievable. I mean, it's everything is like the up-to-date technology. It's crazy what they're doing around this school on campus.
So there you have it. That is your Rapid Rewind for this, the 18th of August, 2017. We'll come back and put a bow on this sucker right after this on 730-1039. Yep. That was an annoying promo, don't you think? All right, let's get a last update with T-Mac. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
Penn State and head coach James Franklin have agreed to a six-year, $34 million contract. The contract includes a $2 million buyout for 2017. His $5.8 million a year puts Franklin as the fourth highest-paid coach in college football behind Harbaugh, Saban, and Urban Meyer. Hugh Freeze and a disassociated booster, Lee Harris, had at least 200 phone conversations between January 2015 and the end of Freeze's tenure last month. Harris allegedly gave a recruit cash and free food at a restaurant he owns in Oxford. Cam Newton will not play this weekend's preseason game against the Tennessee Titans at Nissan Stadium. Newton, who was held on a pitch count this week during practice, is still rehabilitating a surgically repaired shoulder. And also, ex-Vandy football player Brandon Banks sentenced to 15 years for his involvement in a 2013 gang rape of a female student. And finally, afternoon baseball, the Cubs knocked off the Blue Jays 7-4 at Wrigley Field. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
All right, so by the time we get together on Monday, I'm assuming that the eclipse thing will be over, right? How long is this thing supposed to last once the moon goes in front of the sun and it's like a real big deal?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong person. I know about what time it starts, and I'm just hoping to be around afterwards.
What time does it start? 1:20-something? Or
1:27, 1:30-ish is what time it passes me.
How long does it last? They say the temperature will drop 10 degrees or something. I don't know. Look, guys, the last one was in 79. I was 19 years old when it went down. It was nothing. It was like a cloud passed in front of the sun. Stop it with this eclipse stuff, will ya? This is the most overrated thing since 2K or whatever that. I mean, stop it. 2YK. Remember 2YK and the world was going to come to an end? Our clocks weren't going to work and all that stuff? That Y2K, 2YK, whatever it is. Eclipse 2017. Just stop it. It's like a cloud. It's no big deal. Enjoy the eclipse. We'll talk to you after that, God willing. Have a great night, everybody.
WUMP Sports Radio, The Op.